The Nightmarish World of Putt-Putt. The Putt-Putt series was a collection of point-and-click adventure games designed for young children by Humongous Entertainment. The main series started with Putt-Putt Joins the Parade for MS-DOS in 1992 and ended in 2003 with Pep's Birthday Surprise. The seven-game series is beloved by many who had access to a computer throughout the 90s, known for its vibrant colors, fun characters, various mini-games, and the unique, clickable interactions showcased throughout countless background props. In this video, we'll be taking a look at the Putt-Putt universe, its inhabitants and their society, and the dark secret hiding beneath all the color and joy. Let's take a look. Let's begin by looking at the inhabitants of this colorful world. The primary inhabitants are a wide variety of sapient wheeled conveyances. I hesitate to refer to them as cars, as that's not quite an accurate descriptor. Cars certainly maintain a significant percentage of the population, but the inhabitants also include sapient vans, trucks, trains, carts, carriages, bumper cars, and more. Having a motor is not a prerequisite for sapience, as we see multiple hand trucks and food carts. In Putt-Putt Joins the Circus, we even encounter a sapient unicycle. At the same time, having wheels does not guarantee sapience, as in the first game, Putt-Putt Joins the Parade, Putt-Putt utilizes a non-sapient lawnmower to mow lawns. Curiously, we never see a sapient motorcycle or bicycle throughout the series, although there is a sapient scooter in Putt-Putt Enters the Race. In a musical segment in Joins the Circus, a monkey is seen riding a non-sapient dirt bike. So, to say the least, sapience amongst wheeled conveyances in this universe is somewhat arbitrary. Those are not the only inhabitants of the universe, however, as there are also a large number of sapient or otherwise highly intelligent animals. This is another category in which sapience is rather arbitrary, as animals range from being fully anthropomorphic to being slightly more intelligent than their baseline equivalent. Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo is, of course, our greatest look at fully sapient animals, featuring a collection of animals that are self-aware, have personalities, and can speak fluently. These include lions, hippopotamuses, giraffes, snakes, seals, and elephants. Their intelligence is ostensibly near human, although the fact that they reside in a zoo is a bit of a conundrum. There are also a number of sapient animals in the circus, although once again whether they're there as employees or are owned by the business is hard to say. The circus also includes an entire collection of intelligent fleas that speak with Putt-Putt, and who don't seem to desire anything more than to perform and have shelter. When Putt-Putt goes to the moon, we catch a glimpse of a family of mice that are touring the locale in their own spaceship, so presumably they also possess a reasonably high degree of intelligence. Beyond this, most of the animals seen do not speak, but they are undeniably more intelligent than typically expected. A polar bear in the zoo plays hockey against Putt-Putt. A crow and a family of geese attend Pep's birthday and Pep's birthday surprise. And then there's Pep himself. Pep is a young dog that Putt-Putt adopts in the first game, Putt-Putt Joins the Parade, after finding him lost and scared in a cave. He remains his constant companion throughout the remainder of the series. Although Pep cannot speak an intelligible language, it's quite clear that he can fluently understand others, and can even read, as shown in Pep's Birthday Surprise. Pep is never confused by any task Putt-Putt sets him on, and immediately initiates said tasks based only on Putt-Putt telling him what to do. Beyond that, Pep also displays more sophisticated emotions than would be expected, as the entire premise of Pep's Birthday Surprise is Putt-Putt wanting to throw him a surprise party after Pep is found depressed from never having a birthday. In addition to the metallic constructs and animals, the moon is also host to a wide range of alien creatures that presumably inhabit other planets and potentially other solar systems. They possess technology far exceeding baseline reality, including sophisticated spacecrafts, teleportation devices, and even machines that can radically morph a creature's physiology, seemingly without effort. The aliens aren't generally that familiar with Earth's societies or concerned with the metallic constructs that inhabit it. The moon has its own governor, but he seems to be more of a figurehead leader compared to the true power that resides there, the man in the moon. This entity seems to be similar to Ego, the living planet from the Marvel Universe, in that he seems to be the moon itself, while also being capable of appearing in a much smaller, more communicable form. The man in the moon is enigmatic, but quite powerful, effortlessly displaying magical powers in front of Putt-Putt. He also professes to be over 10,000 years old, but he does have his limits, as Putt-Putt helps him obtain a picture of himself, something he's wanted for a very long time. His exact goals remain unknown. That just leaves us to discussing humans. We know, with fairly definitive proof, that humans did at least once exist in the Putt-Putt universe, and not that long ago. When Putt-Putt travels to the moon, he meets a lunar rover with an American flag emblazoned on its side. The rover explains that he was brought here from Earth by astronauts, but they left him behind when they went home. This is, admittedly, the only direct evidence that humans once existed, but much of the culture and architecture of the vehicle society is clearly directly influenced and based around humanity. A society that was strictly inhabited by metallic constructs wouldn't have developed in this exact way without human influence. This even comes down to their physical design, as many of the vehicles possess things that they themselves have no obvious use for, such as car seats, or handles, or windshields. There is a strange remark by Putt-Putt in the first game after having his windshield cleaned in which he states that now he can see again. An oddity, to be sure, especially considering that some of the vehicle's eyes have directly replaced their windshields, while others have eyes on their front. That begs the question, of course, of what happened to humans if they no longer exist. There is the possibility that they do still exist, they just are not located in any of the places Putt-Putt visits throughout the series, including Cartown, the moon, and when he travels back in time to the Old West and to the future. It's possible, but the more likely explanation is that they are no longer present, due to some recent catastrophe or war. The only example we're shown of them is by Rover claiming that they brought him to the moon and left him behind, which means that he was sapient when they abandoned him. Considering their utter lack of regard for a fellow intelligent creature, it's likely that humans expressed only a sense of superiority over the creatures they believed to be beneath them. Perhaps the vehicles were no longer accepting of this arrangement and rose up. I imagine if every vehicle and wheeled apparatus on Earth suddenly decided to eliminate humanity, it wouldn't take that long. Sure, there might be some pockets of humans still existing out there, living in fear, but the Earth belongs to the cars now. Let's talk a bit more about the physiology of these vehicles, as they have certainly progressed in some ways compared to what we would imagine. Every sapient metallic construct possesses eyes, located either on the front of the chassis or on their windshields, sometimes replacing the windshields entirely. They also possess mouths, located on their fronts, which are somehow capable of warping the metal around them to open and close. Beyond those two features, however, the variety of constructs throughout the Putt-Putt universe varies wildly. They can come in any color, which can easily change as we see Putt-Putt alter his own color in each game. Their form factor can differ from everything to a convertible, to a fire truck, to a bumper car, with it being exceedingly rare to ever see two identical constructs. In addition to this, the denizens also often stylize themselves with various decorations, from hats, to lipstick, to even facsimiles of facial hair. Most of the constructs possess some form of eyebrows, which are very curiously not attached to them physically, but instead hover by some means above their eyes. We know these to be merely decorative, as we witness BJ Sweeney, the owner of the circus, swap his own mustache and eyebrows effortlessly. They also will occasionally wear some sort of clothing, such as Sweeney's bow tie and coat, although this is far rarer, and there doesn't seem to be any qualms about nudity in the Putt-Putt universe. Another near-universal trait for these constructs is the presence of a flexible and resilient antenna. These are fully controllable by the construct, akin to a long digit, and although they can extend an impressive distance out of their bodies, they do have a limit, as Putt-Putt runs into a few times. While they are impressively strong, much more so than a mundane antenna in our reality, their true utility is in fine motor control. The antenna is the closest thing that the constructs have to a hand, even using it to write with, although they can be seen occasionally gripping things by contorting their chassis to squeeze their wheels together. Putt-Putt frequently uses his antenna to pick things up, put things down, manipulate objects, and anything else that requires a higher degree of control. The most impressive antenna seen in the series comes from the lunar rover, however, who possesses more of a massive claw, able to easily lift fallen sections of a bridge. It's assumed then that there are other constructs that possess similar or even more varied implements. Speaking of, some constructs do have other aspects of their bodies that they are able to manipulate internally. A good example of this is the food truck, Chuck, in Putt-Putt Saves the Zoo, who is seen manipulating the various food items on display, replenishing them from an internal storage without utilizing his antenna, and even distributing hot cocoa from some internal reservoir. It brings up a good question on the nature of their design, whether or not Chuck was born specifically to be a food wagon, or if he has customized himself to take on the employment of one. To answer that, however, we have to dig a bit more into the evolution of these vehicles. We do see child cars throughout the series, including, of course, Putt-Putt himself. In the first game, we help a mother vehicle find her lost child, a small convertible that's even smaller than Putt-Putt. Curiously, the mother is a type of minivan, though we don't get to see the father, assuming there is one. We of course don't get to see any specifics on construct procreation, we just know that they do create young in some manner. We see a billboard advertisement in Joins the Circus for a cereal that displays three young constructs. Two of the three are identical, but they are much more akin to an amorphous blob of metal and glass than other constructs we see. It's possible this is some sort of artistic license for the ad, but they possess very small wheels directly underneath their bodies, and large windshields that dominate their fronts, with their eyes located directly on the windshields. It's likely then that after gestating, pregnant constructs produce this amorphous mass of metal and glass that then grows over time, possibly taking on traits from its parents. We do know that these constructs are incredibly malleable, as evidenced by them easily contorting their chassis, customizing themselves, and easily removing entire parts of themselves. The best example of this is seen in Putt-Putt himself, who begins the series possessing a car seat, but later removes it to leave a gaping cavity in his back. This is a logical change, as Putt-Putt frequently puts large amounts of objects inside of himself during an adventure, and has little use for a car seat, aside from giving Pep a place to sit. We see other constructs that have or don't have car seats, handles, or other holdovers from their time sharing the planet with humans. Another extremely notable trait shared by all of them is their exceptional pain tolerance, or perhaps their lack of ability to feel pain whatsoever. We encounter a tow truck in Enters the Race that has a flat tire with a large gaping hole in the tire. One would imagine this to be an extremely painful event for a sentient vehicle, but the tow truck is more so bummed out about being stuck than in pain. We also see Putt-Putt himself frequently endanger himself with little regard for pain or safety. In Saves the Zoo, he drives along a massive ramp built for the seals, crashing back down onto the ground. Despite numerous nuts and bolts flying out of him upon landing, he just smiles and drives along. It's pretty certain that they have a sense of touch, but obviously they feel little to no pain, and have little regard for their own safety. We also know that they have a sense of taste, as Putt-Putt consumes quite a few different items throughout the series. They certainly run on gasoline, as would be expected, but they also eat and drink like normal creatures. Much of the food items they consume are the same as humans would eat, including fruits and vegetables, dairy products, snack foods, and even cotton candy. It is possible they are all lacto-ovo-vegetarians, as I don't recall any segment in which they are seen eating meat, but they do consume both dairy and egg products. What exactly consuming these items does for the constructs is unclear, nor is it clear how they process the items internally. We know that they fill up on gasoline, as would be expected, and they're also seen drinking oil, so it's perhaps just some remnant of their attachment to humanity, or it provides actual caloric energy for their brains, wherever or in what form those might be in. Curiously, they also have been seen consuming non-traditional food, in the form of a cereal made up of small metal pieces. This was clearly seen in the aforementioned ad directed at child cars, so perhaps this is some sort of supplement designed to increase their mass as part of growing up. Let's move on then to talking about the society at large, as far as these constructs are concerned. We're never shown any sort of central leadership, either for Cartown, where Putt-Putt resides, or their society in general. It's possible that government simply doesn't fit into Putt-Putt's concerns throughout the series, or it's just as possible that they're a self-governing society. They are, beyond most expectations, an extremely civil and law-abiding populace, with everyone that Putt-Putt encounters being highly congenial. That being said, we do know that there is a police force, at least in Cartown, as Putt-Putt encounters a former member of the police that now works as security for the circus. How involved or large the police force is hard to say, as we never really encounter anyone breaking the law, aside from Outback Al. Let me take a moment to talk about Outback Al, as he's perhaps the most infuriating and incompetent villain in all of fiction. Outback Al is, by all appearances, an immigrant from Australia that decided to open up a zoo in Cartown. Where his funds come from is anybody's guess, but the zoo he opens is more of a reservation, spanning miles and miles to allow animals to roam free. No cages are featured in the zoo, and animals are free to span across any of the wildly different climates that the zoo somehow supports, ranging from an African jungle to the Arctic cold. On the day the zoo is meant to open, Putt-Putt arrives to find out that Outback Al is in a great deal of trouble, as a number of baby animals have somehow gone missing. Rather than doing the responsible thing and enlisting his various employees to get things under control, Al tells a local child to do it. Al is then not seen again until the zoo is saved. Putt-Putt discovers that not only are there no cages or restrictions of any kind to prevent the animals from wandering into dangerous environments and habitats, and not only are there barely any employees aside from a food wagon and a gift shop cart, and not only is there no surveillance of any kind throughout the zoo itself is utterly hazardous. Granted, as I already mentioned, it's possible that the constructs that live here cannot feel pain and somehow have a remarkable tolerance for damage. There are still certain hazards that we know to be, at best, an extreme inconvenience, and at worst, deadly. There is a bridge into the jungle section that looks as if it was purposefully cut out, requiring visitors to swing across a vine above a hungry crocodile that doesn't appear to have any qualms about chewing on metal. There is a massive set of river rapids, along with a huge waterfall, and the only means by which visitors are able to traverse these sections is through a small wooden raft that can barely hold Putt-Putt. There's an Arctic section with freezing water, and when Putt-Putt attempts to drive through the area for the first time, an avalanche occurs, nearly burying him in a massive amount of snow. Putt-Putt finds a baby lion on a tiny ledge halfway down the waterfall, with no indication of how she got there or how she'd get out. He finds a hippo stuck on a small piece of floating ice in the Arctic, and a snake nearly about to freeze to death in the Arctic. It's almost certain that without Putt-Putt's intervention, Outback Al would have gone to prison for a very long time, and he still should have. It doesn't end there, however, as later, when Putt-Putt is trying to enter a local race, he meets Outback Al again at his home. Now, Al claims that he stayed home today to look after a baby aardvark, but he has completely forgotten what baby aardvarks eat, once again requiring Putt-Putt to help him out. Outback Al is a menace and needs to be stopped before he kills someone or something. Anyways, moving on. As for their economy, we know that they have at least one form of currency in the form of small coins. Despite this, across the series, we have very little grasp of how much a coin is worth. Putt-Putt uses them infrequently, purchasing a car wash or a color change in Cartown for 2 or 3 coins respectively. In the 5th game, Putt-Putt purchases a set of high-end racing tires, which are, according to the salesman, the best tires on the market. The salesman says they're normally 2 coins apiece, but for Putt-Putt, he sells them for 4 coins for the set. It's possible that tires are mass-produced to such a degree in the Putt-Putt universe that their cost, even for the highest quality ones, is next to nothing. We're not shown prices for almost anything else, and in fact, many things are often given away for free, with specific signs declaring this. In a toy shop, Putt-Putt picks up some free batteries. At the zoo, he picks up a free camera, and he grabs some free birdseed from Baldini's grocery store. The most notable thing that's free in Cartown, however, is gasoline. It's likely that this is some sort of government subsidy due to most metallic constructs requiring it to live, although Putt-Putt is only shown refilling himself in the 1st game. The technology level of the Putt-Putt universe, aside from the aliens, is relatively consistent with modern reality, with a few notable exceptions. The constructs themselves are, of course, marvels, but they largely exist within parameters we would expect from average people. An exception to this, however, is an acquaintance of Putt-Putt's named Mr. Firebird. In the 2nd game, Putt-Putt goes to the moon. He visits Mr. Firebird's fireworks factory. While there, he gets to try out Mr. Firebird's complex machinery setup that mass-produces fireworks single-handedly. During the tour, Pep leaps onto a large lever nearby while chasing a butterfly, which launches a massive firework. The firework ends up underneath Putt-Putt, lifting him and Pep out of the factory and into the atmosphere. It eventually fizzles out, but the propulsion carries Putt-Putt into the moon's orbit. I think it's safe to say this is a feat not easily replicable in our reality, for multiple reasons, and based on some comments by Mr. Firebird, it's almost as if he anticipated this result. Curiously, Putt-Putt also had a vacuum-sealed helmet for Pep ready to go. Putt-Putt returns to Earth by fixing up a rocket that American astronauts left there years ago. Later, in the 4th game, Putt-Putt travels through time. He makes another visit to Mr. Firebird, who seemingly abandoned his firework factory for a more general laboratory. His latest project, presumably his magnum opus, is a time machine that allows one to view the past or future through a time portal. The specifics of why this isn't more publicized or a bigger deal in the Putt-Putt universe is unclear, as he fires it up for the first time just to demonstrate it to Putt-Putt. Very curiously, the time machine is in some way controlled or powered by a washing machine that requires 5 cents to turn on. This is pretty perplexing for a few reasons. First, it seems that there are smaller denominations of coins still in circulation, likely a holdover from when humans existed. Second, why a genius like Mr. Firebird would need a washing machine involved at all in the time machine? And third, why he couldn't figure out a way to not have it require coins to be inserted. He explains that the washing machine provides the perfect ratio between the inverted subspace bubble frequency, the molecular torque, and the spin cycle. Perhaps Mr. Firebird's genius just can't quite be understood by us at this point. On the other hand, the whole thing malfunctions as soon as he tries it, sucking Putt-Putt through a time portal and stranding him, so perhaps he's not that smart after all. Then again, it could be that much like the firework, Mr. Firebird anticipated this result and purposefully used Putt-Putt as a guinea pig. Alright, so we have a society filled with metallic constructs and animals that gained sapience at some point in the past, prior to humans being absent from civilization. They all get along extremely well, have a virtual utopia aside from the presence of Outback Al, and their entire existence seems to be filled with nothing but sunshine and rainbows. You might be asking then, why this video is titled The Nightmarish World of Putt-Putt. Well, that brings me to my theory about Putt-Putt. It's my contention that much of what we see while playing the games is a very elaborate facade that revolves around Putt-Putt. While playing through the series, I started to think that it was somewhat odd how convenient everything is put together for Putt-Putt to solve. The relevant people and objects necessary for Putt-Putt to solve certain puzzles and complete his goal for the day are all exactly placed and situated where they need to be. The owner of the tire shop happens to be having a flat tire, and the tire repair kit happens to be free for Putt-Putt to take to give to him, so he can in turn provide an exceptional deal for Putt-Putt on some new racing tires that he needs to enter the big race. It's all just a little too convenient. My theory is that the people of Cartown and beyond all work together in advance, an extremely impressive display of coordination and teamwork, in order to stage all these sequences for Putt-Putt's benefit. They make sure they know ahead of time what Putt-Putt wants to do that day, so they can move things around, get everyone situated, and create some basic puzzles and tasks for him to solve. This way, he gets to have a fun little adventure, but not one that's too difficult for him to solve, nor one that's too obviously staged and simple. Whether Putt-Putt is aware that they're doing this is impossible to say, as he plays his part as well as the others do, all of them just actors on a grand stage. You might ask then, why? Why would all of these individuals, all with their own problems and concerns, running a functioning society, bother with putting on these elaborate ruses for a child? Well, it's my theory that Putt-Putt is omnipotent. In fact, I believe Putt-Putt to be the closest thing they have to a god, and is likely responsible for both granting sapience and for wiping out humanity. To be clear, we never exactly see Putt-Putt display any feats of omnipotence throughout the games, but there are certainly some oddities. Despite Putt-Putt being pretty clearly a child, we never see or hear anything about his parents, and he seemingly lives alone. Putt-Putt's house, which is really more of a garage, is located somewhat on the outskirts of Cartown, sometimes even with a sign pointing to it. The really curious thing, however, is the layout of Cartown itself in relation to his home. There always seems to be a direct road leading to Putt-Putt's house, but where it goes from there varies wildly. Sometimes it leads to Cartown proper, and other times it leads directly to another location, such as Mr. Firebird's workshop or Baldini's grocery store. It's hard to explain this through any means other than Putt-Putt's reality bending. It would also explain some other oddities, such as Mr. Firebird's rocket and time machine being so fantastically out of place compared to the technology levels of the rest of their society. If Putt-Putt is directly involved in making those things function, anything is possible. In addition, while we do know that none of the constructs seem to feel pain, it is clear that they can be damaged, such as the tow truck getting a flat tire. Putt-Putt, however, seems to be immune, leaping off massive ramps and suffering no repercussions. The biggest evidence, of course, remains, however, that the town seems to stage his adventures for his benefit. They do this out of fear. Putt-Putt is their god, the entity responsible for granting them sapience and for wiping out humans, a species they clearly didn't get along with exceptionally well. We know that because humans disregarded a sapient lunar rover and left it on the moon without a care. It's likely that humans grew complacent in their mastery over the constructs, and obviously the constructs had quite the attachment to humans, even keeping their car seats and door handles for years after the extinction event. We don't know exactly when the sapience event occurred, and the game in which Putt-Putt travels through time muddies things a bit. Putt-Putt travels back into prehistoric times and encounters sapient dinosaurs and even a sapient stone wheel, which leaves a few possibilities. 1. The sapience event occurred millions of years ago, and these things evolved alongside humans. This is fairly unlikely, as I doubt humans would have been able to progress far enough to launch a ship to the moon under this sort of timeline. 2. The sapience event occurred in much more recent days, but reverberated throughout time, granting sapience to everything. I think this is more likely, but the timeline still would have been drastically altered, and we know that humans did make it to the moon in this timeline. 3. Putt-Putt specifically granted sapience to those entities that he encountered during his time travel excursion in order to have himself a fun adventure. This one is pretty likely, as it's fairly clear that Putt-Putt can pick and choose what he gives sapience to, such as deliberately not allowing a lawnmower to be sapient so that he can use it to mow lawns. Lastly, and what I would say is the most likely, the time travel episode is a severe drug trip that Putt-Putt had, hallucinating the entire thing for his own amusement. Regardless, humans grew complacent, and while we'll never know how much they were aware of Putt-Putt, Putt-Putt must have decided that their time on this Earth was through. He removed them from existence, but did not remove memories of them, as a reminder to all. I imagine this event wasn't that long ago, and the constructs are only slowly starting to get used to the change, gradually removing their human-centric parts. Perhaps aliens are next, although they seem largely apathetic towards Earth and its denizens. The Man in the Moon is certainly a powerful enough figure in his own right, but we can only speculate as to the extent of his capabilities, especially in comparison to Putt-Putt. With the world under his thumb, then, Putt-Putt seems to prefer retaining his traditional form, that of a child construct, and maintains the facade as one as well. He obviously has an interest in solving puzzles and simple problems, so perhaps his mental state is not that far removed from a child in general, and the facade is more based around maintaining a gentle disposition. As long as those around him humor his wishes for a simple adventure, everything remains happy. This explains quite a lot of things about the adventures that he goes on and the individuals he encounters. On the surface, it would seem as if the entire world except for Putt-Putt is completely incompetent, unable to do even simple tasks by themselves. A perfect example of this is during the preparation for Pep's birthday surprise, when Putt-Putt encounters an individual modeled after a helium tank attached to a cart. This individual apparently has evolved exclusively for inflating balloons, and yet he tells Putt-Putt that he doesn't know how to keep his balloons from floating away. He either has never before conceived of the idea of tying a string to one of his balloons, despite being in full possession of hands, or this is merely an act that he's forced to put on for Putt-Putt's sake so that Putt-Putt can save his day. It's hard to imagine anything more demeaning than that. Practically every inhabitant that Putt-Putt comes across on these adventures, then, has to put on similar acts of incompetency, aside from Outback Al, of course. They also have to fabricate these adventures ahead of time, making sure that things are situated just so that Putt-Putt can solve them. Baldini just so happens to need exactly one apple, one carrot, and one head of cauliflower from the nearby farm, despite running a grocery store that almost certainly gets regular shipments of produce. A baker happens to need Putt-Putt to gather flour and milk in order to bake a cake, despite running a bakery that almost certainly would have such things on hand. A tow truck sits on the side of a road with a flat tire until Putt-Putt comes along to rescue him, despite this having to be a relatively common occurrence in this world. Presumably then, Mr. Firebird is not actually a genius inventor beyond everyone else in the world, but it's just an excuse for Putt-Putt to flex his abilities for more fantastical adventures. Outback Al is, of course, not pretending, however, but perhaps it amuses Putt-Putt to keep him around for his incompetence. So what exactly happens to them if they don't go along with all this and humor Putt-Putt? Perhaps he simply deletes them from existence, as he did the humans. Perhaps he removes their sapience, just as easily as he first granted it. Maybe that's what happened to that poor lawnmower. The truth, however, is a lot more sinister. We finally find out what Putt-Putt does to those who displease him in the final game in the series. We see in the center of Kartown is what appears to be a statue depicting two metallic constructs embracing. When we move the mouse cursor around the screen, however, we see that their eyes follow it. Putt-Putt's wrath has placed these two in indefinite stasis for all eternity, forced to be conscious but immobile as they watch Putt-Putt drive around town solving inane puzzles with a maniacal grin on his metallic face. A fate worse than death. So it's no surprise at all that the poor denizens of Kartown keep up with the facade. And there you have it. On the surface, a perfectly pleasant and joyful adventure game series for children, but looking deeper, we see the horrors resting beneath it all. These days, the Putt-Putt series is in the hands of a company called Tomo, and it doesn't seem likely that we'll ever get a new game in the franchise. Maybe Humongous Entertainment didn't plan for any of these dark aspects. Maybe they just thought they were making a harmless game series for kids about talking cars, years before the Cars movies were a thing. Maybe this is all just one big insane fever dream that I've concocted for myself just to try to explain plot inconsistencies in adventure games from the 90s made for 7-year-olds. But I choose to think otherwise.